I'm Heather Vale, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me today is Arash Ghafouri, CEO of the Nevada Partnership for Homeless Youth, or NPHY. Arash is a passionate advocate for disadvantaged populations with a diverse background in policy, academia, and the startup and corporate worlds. He has leveraged that varied experience to transform NPHY into a community leader on issues affecting Southern Nevada's homeless youth. NPHY is the most comprehensive service provider for homeless youth in Southern Nevada, with core programs and outreach initiatives that touch thousands of teens' lives. They currently have their 7th annual giving campaign going on, and they're looking for your help. Arash, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
For listeners who aren't familiar, when was NPHY first established?
It was established in 2000 and officially licensed as a nonprofit in 2001. So we've been around just for a little over 20 years in the business of doing anything and everything we can to serve young people experiencing homelessness here in Southern Nevada, because as a state, and especially in Southern Nevada, we have one of the worst incidences of youth homelessness in the entire country.
Why is it so bad here?
It's a multitude of factors. It ranges everything from the state and its proximity to our borders, to just issues that affect youth around the country, from domestic violence, breakdown in homes, our culture wars around the LGBTQ community and the immigrant community. And the fact that Las Vegas is a 24/7 city makes it even harder for us to find and work with this population. And, you know, for example, the number one risk factor for a minor to be a sex trafficking victim in America is the fact that they're experiencing homelessness. So it's just a combination of factors that all usually start with a breakdown at home and young people either having to run away or getting kicked out or tossed out of their homes.
What specific services and resources do you offer to these youth who are experiencing homelessness?
Yeah, well, we try to do basically anything and everything we can to help a young person who's experiencing homelessness, whether they just got kicked out of their homes or they've been chronically homeless for several years on the streets. We offer everything from really advanced outreach services. We have a safe place program that's basically available virtually every street corner in Southern Nevada. And we also have an independent living program, a housing program where young people can come in and get housing. We have an emergency shelter. So basically, our services are designed to get a young person out of the streets, and then other services to help them overcome the trauma of being on the streets, and then focus on how they can become independent and self-sufficient young adults by giving them housing, support, education, workforce opportunities, life skills, education, and just a chance to really be a teenager in our community and get exposed to the best it has to offer.
That's awesome. So what is the 7th annual giving campaign all about?
So, you know, it's a time where it's cold in our community and many families are going to be getting together, workplaces are getting together to kind of celebrate the holidays coming up. And it's especially a trying time for young people experiencing homelessness who often don't have families who may be in shelters, housing programs, or worse yet, even on the streets. So we want to make sure that they realize that they're not forgotten about during this time where many of us are celebrating the holidays. So we are basically asking the community, that's private individuals, churches, families, workplaces, corporations, and we have lots of that type of support that are basically getting us gifts right now. We put together a really extensive wish list with probably 40 or 50 different items, ranging from backpacks to, you know, hygiene products, to shoes, to comforters, to alarm clocks, electronics, phone chargers, gift cards. And basically, we are asking the community to get us all that. And then we are doing the It's a Wrap celebration, where basically we're turning it into a gift wrapping workshop where members of our community look at young people's wish list, go shopping through all the different gifts that have been provided to us by the community, wrap them, personalize them with a message so we can get them ready for distribution over the next couple of weeks. And it's our 7th annual giving campaign. It's been sponsored this year by Cox Communications, which has been huge to help us be in a position to get as many gifts as we can back into the community.
Okay, so if listeners go out and get you some of the gifts and supplies that are on the wish list, how do they get those to you?
Yeah, well, there's a couple different ways. So one, we're located at 4981 Shirley Street, Las Vegas, Nevada, 89119, which is basically the south end of UNLV campus. They can go on our website, mphy.org, and look through a holiday wish list, or they can go on our Amazon wish list and either order the gifts directly to our location so they can be just shipped right to us, or they can go shopping for those items through Amazon or through other brick and mortar retail stores in town or wherever they prefer and bring them to our drop-in center where they can drop them off Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, or come during our actual It's a Wrap event.
Okay, so the It's a Wrap holiday block party is going on right now this weekend. So if listeners want to get involved with that and come down and help, how do they do that?
Yeah, you know, we have It's a Wrap going on right now, and you can drop by our drop-in center, which is at 4981 Shirley Street near UNLV. And the great thing is that we have a lot of people here wrapping gifts, celebrating the holidays, personalizing gifts, and it's a great way to also see our drop-in center in action a bit. So people really are getting the opportunity to visit our publicly accessible location, which is kind of the nexus and hub of all of our operations, and see firsthand how we're getting these gifts that they've purchased or others in the community purchased ready to get back into the hands of young people who most desperately need those gifts now and need a little pick-me-up and a little reminder that there are people out there in the community, just like there are here today, working hard to make sure they're not forgotten about.
Okay, so they don't have to sign up or anything to volunteer. They can just drop by and help out?
They can drop by and just give gifts, but there are different blocks that people can sign up on our website at mphy.org, where they can come in and make sure that they sign up for a block. That way they have the space to ensure that they can participate in the event going on right now.
So that's why it's called a holiday block party.
That's right. I mean, we have DJs, we have people dancing, there's a picture station, hot cocoa station, all kinds of stuff going on. So it's just a party where we're wrapping gifts for young people experiencing homelessness and just celebrating everyone coming together to make it happen. So even though it's cold, it's full of warmth and cheer as we celebrate this event. And, you know, hopefully every year keeps getting a bit bigger and bigger so we can get more gifts into the hands of young people, because unfortunately, it's a growing population in our community. And with the effects of COVID and other things have gone on in our community for the last few years, it's especially important that young people feel the love and warmth around the holidays.
What is the time frame that the It's a Wrap holiday block party is going on this weekend?
So we have shifts starting as early as 6:30 a.m. and the last shift starting at 2:30 to help us break down between the days and after the event's over.
Okay, nice. So all of that information, of course, is on the website as well.
Yes, yes. We invite, as we call our volunteers around this time, our holiday elves to help us come out and support wrap gifts or volunteer so others can be in a position to participate.
Okay, awesome. And once you have all these gifts collected and wrapped, how do the kids and teens who need them get them?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there's a couple of different ways we do that. So there's about three core ways. One, we are doing this right now at our drop-in center, and this is visited up to 15,000 times a year by young people experiencing homelessness. So we've had them sign up for wish lists. We've notified them and let them know that there'll be gifts and they can come drop by where they'll receive a gift. We also do a lot of outreach where we take our services out into the streets through our Feel Good Friday event and other events. So through our outreach teams and efforts, we'll be distributing gifts out on the streets. And then lastly, we also help other agencies and other housing programs in town and making sure they get gifts. And lastly, some of those gifts will be going to young people who are in our own programs, who are living with us or staying with us either in our housing program or our shelter program.
Okay. And what is the deadline for holiday donations?
Well, we're doing the event right now, but that doesn't mean that anyone can't drop by anytime that we're open up to, you know, around Christmas time, anytime between 8 to 5 at the drop-in center to drop off more, and we'll make sure those get to the hands of young people. And, you know, we try to make it easy as possible. So it can be anything from any of the items on our wish list on our website, all the way to gift cards to food locations, grocery stores in town, Target, etc., so young people can also get things that they need.
Nice. Okay. So once again, the website is nphy.org, nphy.org. It stands for Nevada Partnership for Homeless Youth, nphy.org. And the 7th annual giving campaign is going on now. So you can check out the wish list. You can do some shopping, donate some toys and supplies for the homeless teens. And if you want to take part in the 7th annual It's a Wrap holiday block party and actually help wrap up some of those gifts, that's happening this weekend. So go to the website. If you want to help out, you can pick a block and you can help out this weekend with that initiative. And you can call yourself a holiday elf. What's better than that, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
All right. So once again, nphy.org. And the drop-in center, once again, the address is 4981 Shirley Street. It's near UNLV at Maryland Parkway in Tropicana, 4981 Shirley Street. And Arash, do you have anything else that you would like the listeners to know about NPHY or about the youth in our community who are experiencing homelessness?
Yeah, I mean, these are some of our most vulnerable youth. And like I said before, we have one of the highest incidences of youth homelessness in our country. So we really need all the holiday elves that we can get to put us in a position to make sure no young person doesn't have to have a gift or get our services during this time. And we really just want to thank all those holiday elves. And we want to thank Cox Communications for helping bringing us all of us together to be wrapping gifts this weekend and making sure that we're in a position to start distributing gifts as soon as possible. And, you know, it's quite the spectacle. So invite everyone down to come see. We have to get pods and we fill up several pods. And in addition to rooms in our own buildings, just full of gifts. And it's crazy how many gifts we produce, but then how fast they go back out. So that's how bad the need is. So we just want to thank everyone for being part of helping making this holiday season warmer and brighter for young people experiencing homelessness.
That's fantastic. So once again, nphy.org is the website if you want more information. And Arash, I want to thank you so much for being here and telling us what's going on, how you're helping the youth experiencing homelessness. So thank you for your time. Thank you for talking to us. Thank you for letting people know how they can get involved. And especially thank you for doing what you do to help the youth in our community. I appreciate it.
Of course. And thank you, Heather, for helping us get the word out there.
When I was younger, I may have did some stupid things, even committed some crimes, but I am not a criminal.
Youth Advocate Programs is a community-based alternative to youth incarceration, congregate placement, and neighborhood violence. Learn how at yapinc.org.
I'm Heather Vail, and you're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me today is home renovation expert Ty Pennington, best known as former host of Extreme Makeover Home Edition, and AARP's family and caregiving expert Amy Goyer. According to AARP's research, 3/4 of those 50 and older want to stay in their current home and community because they treasure the memories they've made there. But simple home improvements may be needed to make the home ready to age gracefully with them. Holiday family gatherings are the perfect time to talk about how best to care for your loved ones and how to make their home comfortable and safe for years to come. Ty and Amy, thank you both so much for being here today.
Well, thanks for having us.
Yeah.
So how should people start a conversation with loved ones about the need to renovate their home?
You know, it's really important to talk early and often because when you're looking at someone aging, you know, everybody ages differently. There can be different needs. But if you talk about it before there's a crisis, you're going to be a step ahead of the game. And you need to talk about it often because needs change and resources change. And, you know, your loved one's wishes may change. When you do it, make sure that you have done your homework and observe the things that you're concerned about with your loved one and let them know what the options are. So, for example, you're concerned about mom going down to the basement to do laundry and carry laundry baskets up. Don't just say, mom, you shouldn't be doing that anymore. Say, I'm concerned about this. And here are the options. We could put a washer and dryer on the main floor, or we could put a washer and dryer on the floor where your bedroom is, so you're not carrying the clean clothes up and down. Or we could have someone else do the laundry. You know, talk about what the specific options are. And the other thing is to approach it with love and concern because, you know, we're not here to take over people's lives. We're all on the same team. We want our loved ones to remain as independent as possible for as long as possible. So ask them how they think they're doing. Validate that, you know, change is hard, but we're going to do this together and we can make it beautiful and we can make it safer.
Yeah. Okay. I think I think having the conversation is the important thing. And then it's also just observing, you know, and seeing where you think they are struggling, and whether that is with their bathroom, which is always sort of a challenge, because safety bars are so important, not to mention just something as simple as putting a riser on a toilet so that, you know, sitting down becomes a challenge and getting up.
Getting up especially.
But it's also those areas that can be slippery, but, and that can be not only tile, but it can also be like in a rug that's loose, that's the, you know, that can cause a trip and a fall. And so it's a little bit of everything, and just getting in and out of the home. Stairs become a huge challenge, but I think there's things big and small you guys that you can do as a family. The question is how do you budget and prioritize it?
Well, yeah, that is a good question, because, you know, we can observe and assess and have those conversations and determine what's needed, but then the price comes in. So how do we prioritize all those needs and actually stick within a budget?
Well, yeah, that's the challenge.
Budget's the challenge.
But I think if you look at it as, you know, as aging is a gradual process, I think the renovation can also be a gradual process. And so what the most important thing is, what is used most often? Probably the bathroom and the stairs. So if you can find a way to put money aside to tackle those things, then maybe worry about the smaller things like the lighting, maybe smart home technology, as well as, you know, sometimes in my mom's case, we've got respiratory issues. And so I had to put a HEPA filter in to make sure that the air is super clean so that the home is, you know, a really healthy environment to be in. Mm-hmm. So sometimes that you have to redo a lot of things, including making sure you've got great windows to do that. That could be a little bit further down the road, but I think it's sort of what is the most critical at the moment, because it is a gradual process.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes there are no cost or low cost things like securing throw rugs or just actually getting a new light bulb that's a little bit brighter, or
lowering shelves.
Yes. Yeah. Making things so that they're easy to reach in the kitchen and they're not trying to climb up on a stepladder, you know, things like that.
Or as you mentioned, just moving things around, like moving the washer and dryer to a more convenient location. Mm-hmm. I mean, that could be pretty simple.
Yeah,
it could be. Yeah. As long as you have the water hook up and then you get a qualified person to help you do that. And, you know, that can make all the difference for some people to be able to stay in their homes.
Yeah. And I think the important thing, too, is to make sure you still give them their independence so that they can take care of themselves, because nobody wants to feel like they've become a burden or that they are, you know, a pain in the neck to sort of take care of. And so giving them that independence, whether they can not only, you know, bathe for themselves, take care of their own needs, but then also maybe wash and dryer and all of that. And that's also about, you know, if they still want to cook and be part of the family, make sure they've got a place where they can sit and still be able to like cut vegetables and all of that and be part of the family, especially during the holidays, which is when you always want to be involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Now, Amy, you mentioned hiring someone who's qualified, but, you know, Ty, you've kind of helped make it that everyone thinks they can DIY, right? Everyone thinks they can do their own home renovation. So what are the pros and cons of hiring a contractor versus making it a DIY project? And when do we decide whether we should do it ourselves or not?
Well, I mean, that comes with, you know, a lot of renovations you can do that you're not dealing with the foundation, or you're really moving walls, et cetera. If it's something just as simple as a ramp that you can build that comes assembled and you just attach to the house that you're already living in, then that works out great. You know, when you're dealing with foundations and moving, you know, things and stairs and all the above, that can be a lot more. But I think there's a lot of changes you can make that don't have to really cause huge structural changes. Look, there's situations where you want to open up a kitchen so that you have better access, you know, to move around. Now, that's going to be a lot of money, because you're going to have to jack up, you know, the ceiling. You have to run a beam all the way across, all of that. But you know, if you're talking about just mobility in certain areas, I think it's something that's attainable for everyone.
Yeah. And, you know, it's something like grab bars. Mm-hmm. I first had some grab bars put in our home where I cared for my parents. My dad had Alzheimer's, and I had a handyman do it, who had done handyman stuff for my dad for years. He didn't do them correctly. And the, you know, I grab onto the bar and it comes out of the wall.
Yeah,
so then I got somebody who knew what they were doing
and
they put the correct kind of anchors in.
Yeah. And so sometimes what you have to do is you have to take the drywall off and you have to literally put more 2x4s and basically just an entire blocking in the wall so that you can grab into some real wood when you screw those bars in, because otherwise it's just going to rip right out of the
They're
drywall.
Pointless, yeah. Right? Yeah.
Now, when does it come to a point where it's like, you know what? The renovations aren't going to work in this particular home because maybe it's a 3-story house and then the mobility issues getting up and down the stairs. Instead of just moving to another home that's single story, are there other options we can do? Like maybe make it, the big rage lately seems to be multi-generational homes. So maybe have, right. The younger generation move upstairs, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you can do things like that. You can also get an accessory dwelling unit that is like a little tiny home that you put in the yard where it's all accessible, and then the rest of the family lives in the bigger house. But there's also stair lifts that kind of ride you up the stairs.
Yeah.
And, you know, some families are doing, you know, like elevators or lifts because it's actually less expensive than doing an addition to the home.
Yeah, the first thing I did for my mom was put in the stair lift that went like up these really long stairs in her house up in Atlanta. And it was great, but then it also took away the only exercise she had. So you have to also weigh that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I think the other thing that we have to remember too is that a lot of people are moving back in, you know, with their families. And we're also trying to save a little money by doing that. But mm-hmm. let's say the family's getting bigger while houses are getting smaller. But don't forget that your garage can also be converted into a living space, which is already on ground level. You just have to sort of really put the time and effort into making sure it's insulated and et cetera. But that is also a space that I think I've already seen my wife talking, you know, eventually you're going to be living here.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, that's really looking toward the future.
Yeah. My best friend just did that for her mom. They converted their garage, and it's a really nice apartment.
Yeah.
That's actually a fantastic idea. Now, I'm in Las Vegas, so obviously insulation is key because in the summertime, those garages get hot. But
yes. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, when you're weighing it against a full move, a full purchase of a new home, I mean, that could be a great option.
Mm-hmm. It can be. And like Ty said, you get insulation, you get a mini split, some kind of HVAC system, and it can be done.
And you can control that small environment, which is what it's all about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Or you can build another apartment on top of the garage like they had back in the Happy Days days.
Absolutely. And those are considered accessory dwelling units too. And a lot of communities are approving those because of housing shortages, but also because of multi-generational living and all of our aging population.
And if you start looking at the price of what it costs to really house an elderly person too, you know, you start to realize that a renovation may be actually cheaper in the long run.
Absolutely.
Because then the next person, eldest in your family is up next. So you got to remember, it is going to be passed down to the family.
Yes. And bottom line, again, goes back to what are your loved ones' wishes? 3/4 of people want to stay in their homes. So if there's a way to adapt and move around and make it work, that's the best thing to do.
Perfect. Okay. So where can listeners go to learn more about this topic or AARP in general?
Go to aarp.org/caregiving. We have all kinds of tips and tools. I have a column on the site. We have great resources about caregiving and aging, but also about the home renovations. And, we have really practical supports.
Agreed.
Okay. And Ty, where can people find out more about what you're up to these days?
Well, you could just follow me on Instagram, which is the Ty Pennington, or just catch me on HGTV, where I'm doing all kinds of TV shows. I thought I was retired, but they've brought me out. So it looks like I'll be using the ramp for a while.
Yay.
Perfect. Okay. So once again, aarp.org/caregiving is the site to go to for more information about home renovation, aarp.org/caregiving. And if you want to follow Ty Pennington on Instagram, it's @TheTyPennington. And Ty and Amy, I want to thank you both so much for being here and talking about this very important topic. And you had so many great tips and insights. So I really appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Thanks so much for having us.
Dad, I picked up your pills, made your lunch, and your laundry is done.
When you care for a loved one, you take care of everything. But are you taking care of yourself? Find free care guides at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
I'm Heather Vale, and you're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Today, I'm speaking with Dr. Stephen Evans, Chief Medical Officer for the statewide Silver Summit Health Plan. Silver Summit recently launched Project Accelerate, a new program to help save lives of women diagnosed with breast cancer. And at this time of year, it's also important to talk about holiday depression and how to make positive, healthy New Year's resolutions. Dr. Evans, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for asking me.
So what exactly is Project Accelerate?
Project Accelerate is a program that we developed at Silver Summit Health Plan in order to expedite the care for women who have been diagnosed with breast cancer. This idea came from some research that I read about 2 or 3 years ago, in which it showed that if a woman is diagnosed with breast cancer and does not receive treatment quickly, her overall survival goes down dramatically. And the statistics are pretty shocking. If there's a delay of more than 30 days, survival actually goes down by 10%. And if there's a delay of more than 60 days, then survival goes down by 20%. So I want your listeners and you to think about that. We spend billions and billions of dollars every year trying to help women at the very end of life with, you know, several more months, which is important, obviously. Mm-hmm. But in reality, the real important part of treatment is getting treatment quickly. Because if we can just get women treatment as soon as the cancer is diagnosed, then their survival goes up dramatically. So when I found out about this, I was actually at another health plan at the time. And I was talking to a breast surgeon that I'm friends with in Los Angeles, Dennis Holmes, and he was aware of this research and data, and he had actually put together a program at his hospital. He was at a community hospital in Los Angeles, and he developed a process in which he made sure that any woman who had a diagnosis of breast cancer was treated very quickly. And he actually developed, he has an interest in software. He developed a software program to track the cases of women who had positive biopsies for breast cancer and make sure that all the steps along the way are taken care of so there's no delays. So if you think about why there might be delays, there's a number of different steps, but I'm just going to say that in Nevada, the average time it takes a woman to get her treatment for her breast cancer after diagnosis, the average time is 68 days. Now, keep in mind that I said that if you have a delay of more than 60 days, you have a decrease in overall survival by 20%. So just by the fact that we have our whatever system we have in Nevada, our healthcare system, we're missing out on helping women to achieve the best possible result after breast cancer. So what we did is we analyzed where are all of the delays. And certainly there are a number of different places, but if you have a positive mammogram, that result gets sent back to your primary care doctor, and your primary care doctor will look at the result. It's usually presented to him within a day or two. It's faxed to the primary care provider's office. They look at the result. They will tell their medical assistant to call the patient and have them come in so they can discuss the result. Obviously, that's not something that often we want to talk to our patients about on the phone. So they will call the patient. All that usually takes 4 or 5 days. Then the patient will schedule an appointment to come in and talk to the doctor. And on average, that takes about 2 weeks for them to come in, sometimes more, sometimes less. So now we're 2.5 weeks into it. Now, if in fact the primary care provider sends the patient to get a breast biopsy, that takes another couple of weeks to get that scheduled. That gets done. The result now goes back to the primary care provider. That takes another 4 or 5 days. As you can see, that they just day after day, week after week is wasted when in reality, because breast cancer is so different than every other cancer and it spreads or metastasizes quickly, you have to get that cancer out quickly. So what we did is we broke down all of those areas where there's delays, and we said, we're not going to allow any more delays. And so we use this software system developed by Dr. Holmes in my previous health plan with a group of Medicare patients that we were involved with. And we said, as soon as the mammogram is positive, that result's going to come to our coordinator, who's going to put the result into the system. And then we're going to give the primary care provider 2 days, 48 hours, in order to call the patient and let them know about that. If they don't do that, then we offer to do it ourselves. We hired nurse practitioners who then would discuss with the patient that they needed to go have a biopsy. We then partnered with a radiology group who promised us that they would do the biopsy within 2 to 3 days. That got done. The biopsy, if that was positive, again, we gave the primary care provider 2 to 3 days to call the patient. If they didn't do it, then our nurse practitioner would take care of that. And then we partnered with a surgeon who would see the woman with the positive biopsy, if in fact it was positive, within 2 to 3 days. And then that surgeon also guaranteed us that they would schedule the surgery within a week. And if the patient needed chemotherapy instead of surgery, we contracted with a oncologist who would see the patient within 2 to 3 days and guarantee that they would give the chemotherapy within a week. So that previous project I did with another health plan, we had an average of 68 days when we started with those patients. We brought it down to 34 days. We cut it almost exactly in half.
Yeah.
And so when I came to Silver Summit Health Plan, I was kind of recruited to come to this health plan. I said, I'll do this, but I want to be able to do this same project with Medicaid patients and with our Silver Summit Health Plan patients. And our CEO, Eric Schmacher, said, absolutely. You know, as soon as you get on board, we're going to start working on this. So we actually got the funding for it, and we're going to start seeing our first patients in about a week. Our partners are Steinberg Diagnostics. They've agreed to do the same thing. They're going to see our patients within 2 to 3 days each step along the way. We have some great breast surgeons that have agreed to help us. Hope Cancer Center is going to see our patients if they need chemotherapy within 2 to 3 days. And I think we're going to have just as much success with our Silver Summit Medicaid patients as we did with our Medicare patients previously.
Wow, that's fantastic. So it's not a matter of changing the process per se. It's about keeping the checks and balances moving along so there's not all those delays in between the pieces of the progress.
That's absolutely correct. And this software actually is very interesting. Everyone who's in the project is connected to the software. And if someone has not done what they need to do within, let's say you have 3 days in order to get the patient into the biopsy, everyone is notified that there's been more than 3 days. And then we make sure that that delay stops right there and the patient gets scheduled right away. So yeah, it's not changing any actual what's getting done. It's just taking all of the delay out of the system because breast cancer, it's so important to get the breast cancer out quickly.
That's great. Now, this being the holiday season, it seems like we see a lot more depression than normal. Why is depression so prevalent during the holidays?
Well, the holidays can be uplifting and a special time for many people, but you know, others deal with depression, especially during this time. And it's actually got a name. It's called the holiday blues or holiday depression. And it's defined by feelings of sadness that last throughout the holiday season, especially during November and December. And it can be due to a number of reasons. Some of them, you know, holidays bring up additional pressure to connect. And for some of us, we don't feel connected. And so that additional pressure to connect makes us even more depressed. The holidays are often a time of high emotion and demands. A lot of people feeling stressed and exhausted because of this. There's deadlines. There's a lot of traveling. We're planning our parties. We're doing shopping. All these things can keep us up at night. And then there's the cold and dark winter days. I mean, today is a pretty dreary day, you know, in Las Vegas, and that can contribute. There's just increased anxiety overall. There's relationship challenges. You know, the holidays should be a time of goodwill and cheer, but sometimes spending time with loved ones brings up images of things that were really good in the past that aren't necessarily as good now. I mean, for others, we're missing loved ones. Either they've passed away or they've moved away. And so we have a different dynamic than we used to have in terms of our family. And then people with prior mental health conditions are even more prone to having holiday depression. According to NAMI, which is the National Alliance for Mental Illness, 64% of people with existing mental illnesses have an increase in their conditions during the holidays. So all of these things together make holiday depression a real thing that we have to think about.
What are some signs of depression that we should look for either in loved ones or ourselves?
Some signs include like changes in appetite or weight, changes in sleeping, just in general depressed or irritable mood, hard time concentrating, feeling more tired. And, you know, the big one that I see in a lot of people that is not thought of much is just a loss of pleasure in doing the things that people used to enjoy.
Yeah. What are some tips for dealing with holiday depression?
Well, the number one thing that I mentioned is drink only in moderation. So alcohol is a depressant as it is, and drinking too much just makes things worse. I actually don't know anyone who said, wow, I'm sure glad I got drunk. That made me feel better. Find someone to talk to, whether it's a therapist or a loved one or just a friend. Social isolation is a big risk factor for depression. And the real problem is that sadness, depression makes you want to hide by yourself at home. You don't want to feel like going out, and that just, you know, makes things worse. What I would suggest is look for ways that you can enjoy social connections, even if you're not able to go to someone else's home. If you're feeling lonely, ask a friend to come over and have a talk, join a local club. And the one that I really like is volunteering. That can really help. Another thing is to set boundaries. If you feel uncomfortable about going to a family event, then don't do it. And surround yourself with people who make you feel good, not people who make you feel not good. Physical activity is key. It can be difficult to stick to a workout schedule when you're feeling bad, but research has shown that regular physical activity plays an important role in preventing depression. So, you know, hitting the gym can be tough when you're stressed or sad. But try to remember, you don't need to be on a treadmill in order to get exercise. You can just go for a walk. You can even do breathing exercises at home to calm your nerves. And if you're saddened by the loss or absence of a loved one, one thing I talk to patients about is do a toast or share memories. Don't try and not think about them. Think about the good times that you had with them. And then one of the really big things that I tell people is find time for yourself, even if it's just 15, 20 minutes a day to enjoy some quiet time, listen to music, do yoga, whatever makes you happy, make sure you're doing that for yourself.
Those are some fantastic tips. Now, kind of related to that, you know, how to better ourselves. This is the time of year when people make New Year's resolutions, and often they don't stick with those for more than a few weeks. What are some of the secrets to setting healthy goals and resolutions that we can actually stick with?
Sure, that's a great question. There's really six resolutions for a healthy lifestyle that I recommend. The first one that everybody, you know, it's number one on most people's list, unless you are, you know, just naturally super thin, is to lose weight and keep it off. The next is exercising, which is kind of related, but not necessarily. The next is scheduling an annual checkup, taking steps to reduce your stress, getting more sleep. And if you smoke, stop. So, you know, I'll talk about losing weight and keeping it off. It's one of the most important steps you can take toward better health if, in fact, you have a problem with your weight. But when you're trying to lose weight, it's natural to try and do it quickly. I mean, we've all done that. We fad diets, rapid weight loss plans. I know I've tried them all and they don't work. And that's because you're unlikely to keep weight off if you don't change your entire lifestyle. So losing weight gradually is the most effective way to get to and maintain a healthy weight, and making the permanent lifestyle changes will help you. Some of the weight loss tips that I like to give people: make a list of why you want to lose weight. You know, is it a beach vacation you want to take, better overall health, improved self-esteem? Write these things down and then look at them, you know, almost every day. Next is eat breakfast. Everyone I know who tries to lose weight says, I'm going to fast. I'm going to not eat breakfast. But that's actually the worst thing you can do. Eating breakfast actually increases your metabolism. And if you skip breakfast, you're more likely to eat more at lunch and have overall more calories per day than if you eat a healthy breakfast. And talking about healthy breakfast, make healthy food choices. As much as it's difficult to do and to hear, fruits and vegetables are, in fact, the most healthy foods that we can eat. They're low in calories, they're high in fiber, they have a lot of vitamins and minerals. Fiber keeps you full and it helps you to lose weight. It's also true that lean meats and poultry are healthy. Drink fat-free milk. It's about making healthy food choices. The other thing is, you know, move around, sit less. Physical activity is the key to losing weight and keeping it off. The more you move, the more calories you burn. And walking is an excellent way to exercise. You don't have to go out and run a 10K. A brisk walk for 30 minutes a day is a very effective way to lose weight. Drinking water, being thirsty makes people hungry. And drinking a glass of water before you eat will make you eat less. That's a proven fact. Use smaller plates. This sounds silly, but bigger dishes distort how we think about our serving sizes. So if you have a small plate or bowl, then it helps you to control your portions. Your plate looks more full, and especially if you fill it up with, you know, healthy foods, you'll be eating less. And then snacking. So snacking is not bad. Snacking can be good if you eat healthy snacks. It actually will make you eat overall less calories in a day if, in fact, you're eating healthy snacks like fruits and things that don't have a lot of fat in them that have high fiber. Mm-hmm. And then the last thing I'll say on the weight loss is go easy on the alcohol. Drinking alcohol is not only bad for literally every part of your body, but it's bad for your waistline too. Alcohol has way more calories than people normally think about.
Yeah. Okay. Some great tips there. Now, how do listeners find out more about the Silver Summit Health Plan, or if they're interested in Project Accelerate, how do they find out more about that?
So Silver Summit Health Plan is a leading managed care plan here in Nevada. You can go to silversummithealthplan.com or just type in Silver Summit Health Plan. We have Medicaid, Medicare, and commercial exchange insurance. And I highly recommend you go to that website. The Project Accelerate program does not have a website. It is just for Silver Summit Health Plan members. If in fact you are not in Silver Summit Health Plan and you have a positive mammogram or you have a positive biopsy, breast biopsy, and you're worried that you're not going to get taken care of in an expedited fashion, there's a couple things you can do. And I recommend to your listeners that they do that if they're not members of our health plan. One is, don't allow a doctor's office or anyone who's talking to you about your health care to say that they don't have time for this or that you need to wait, you know, a month for an appointment. When it comes to a sprained ankle or problems with even high blood pressure, those things can wait for a week sometimes or even longer. But if you have a potential problem like breast cancer, it can't wait. So, you know, if I had a loved one who had a positive mammogram and they weren't part of Silver Summit Health Plan, so they weren't going to be able to be part of Project Accelerate, I would tell them to call the doctor's office and say, I want to go on to the next step immediately. Don't allow them to say, we're going to schedule you for an appointment to talk to the doctor in 2 weeks about this, because 2 weeks is half the time that you really, you know, have in order to get that cancer out, if in fact it is cancer. So say, you know what, that's not acceptable. I want to get in now, or at least I want to talk to the doctor right now. And, you know, I don't know anyone in any doctor's office who, when told that, you know, you're concerned that you might have cancer, isn't going to bend over backwards to try and make sure that whatever needs to be done gets done. Doctors in Nevada and their staff, they care about their patients, but sometimes they just have to be reminded when something's super important like this, like breast cancer and mm-hmm. getting the cancer out quickly, they have to be reminded that this is important. In fact, before, you know, I'm ashamed to say I've been a doctor here in Las Vegas for 30 years. Before 3 or 4 years ago, I didn't know about this statistic about the breast cancer having to get out quickly. So I bet there's a lot of providers out there that don't know about it, but now your listeners do. And so if in fact they have a problem like this, I want them to insist on getting the care that they deserve.
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent advice. So once again, silversummithealthplan.com is the website to go to for the Silver Summit Health Plan, silversummithealthplan.com. They have Medicaid, Medicare, and commercial insurance. So you can check it out there, silversummithealthplan.com. www.silverhealth.com. And Dr. Evans, you have shared so many great tips today about so many different important topics. I appreciate your insight. You've made it easy to follow, easy to understand, and you've given people some great food for thought and some great actual real-world strategies that they can implement. So I want to thank you so much for your time and for being here. Very much appreciate it.
Thank you, Heather. It was a pleasure.
Cancer screening can save your life. Begin cervical screening at age 25. At 45, colorectal and breast screening. At 50, discuss lung screening with a doctor. Find resources for free and low-cost screening at cancer.org/get screened. This is a public service message from the American Cancer Society.
I'm Heather Vale, and you're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Today, I'm speaking with Tara Mancini, Director of Public Policy for Power to Decide. Power to Decide is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that works to advance sexual and reproductive well-being for all. And they recently conducted a survey about birth control access for Thanks Birth Control Day. Tara, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Heather, for having me.
So what exactly does Power to Decide do?
We, as you said, are a nonprofit organization, and our mission is to advance sexual and reproductive well-being for all. And we accomplish this by providing trusted information, expanding access to quality services, and catalyzing culture change. And one way that we do catalyze culture change is through our Thanks Birth Control Day campaign that you mentioned.
What prompted that recent survey and the campaign on birth control?
Sure. So we usually do polling or survey every year about different attitudes around birth control, but particularly this year, we wanted to know how people felt in light of the Supreme Court decision in June, which Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health, which overturned Roe v. Wade. In that decision, there was an opinion from Justice Thomas in which he said that other already established rights from other Supreme Court cases should be revisited. And one, Griswold v. Connecticut, the one that gave married couples the right to use contraception, he said should be revisited. And so since that time in June, we have seen people, you know, turned away at some pharmacies from purchasing birth control. There's been a number of concerning stories across the country. And so we really wanted to gauge how that has been impacting communities around the country.
Okay. So first of all, why are pharmacies turning people away from accessing birth control? Is this like just exercising what they perceive to be their own personal rights to make that decision? Or is there some kind of ruling coming down in different pockets across the country that's actually outlawing birth control as well?
No, there aren't any rulings that are coming down. Many pharmacies do have policies in which if it conflicts with your personal beliefs, then there are usually policies in place where you can be excused from that, but you have to make sure that the person is provided with birth control in terms of either making sure there's another pharmacist on staff who can provide you with that. But, you know, we did see, I'm forgetting the state right now, but someone, a cashier, even not even the pharmacist, who refused to sell condoms to a couple during the summer. So there are existing policies that allow people to exercise their rights and beliefs, but also I think people are emboldened by that decision.
Yeah. Okay. So what are some of the key findings from the survey that tell us what people are thinking about this whole situation?
Sure. So we found that nearly 6 in 10 young adults, so that's age 18 to 29, say that the decision from the Supreme Court that I mentioned, overturning Roe, leads them to believe that birth control will be harder to access. And this is pretty stark to the percentage of folks who think that it's birth control is currently difficult for people to access in the U.S., which is 27%. So nearly a doubling in terms of what people think that it's currently difficult to access versus in the future based on the Supreme Court decision. And then we also found that, you know, higher percentages of those who face greater systemic barriers, such as Black and Hispanic people and people with annual household incomes under $50,000, higher percentages of those groups think that it'll be harder to access birth control in the future.
Okay. So you've given a couple of examples of pharmacies that are already making it harder to access birth control, but I'm not sure if that's like kind of a one-off situation or if that's foreboding future. So what do you think? This belief that birth control is going to get harder to access, is that belief founded or not?
It is founded, but it's not just, that is just one example, pharmacies. You know, we have seen, you know, even before this decision, for example, in Missouri in 2021, there was a bill to try and carve out IUDs and emergency contraception from being covered by Medicaid. So meaning that if it had passed and it didn't, that folks who have Medicaid would not be able to use their insurance to cover those methods, if those are the methods that they need or want. And we have seen also, you know, in Idaho, where there is a law in which some universities have interpreted very recently this fall as saying that employees of the university should not refer their students to birth control services. So those are just two examples, you know, off the top of my head. And then there are states like Texas where, you know, the women's health program does not cover emergency contraception. So I think there are instances around the country, these smaller examples that maybe are not well known, but when you add them all up, plus the Supreme Court decision, I think it is concerning. Definitely. And I, you know, we are waiting right now, obviously, or at the end of the year, state legislatures will be coming into session, most of them beginning in January. And so I think folks should be vigilant around the country, including in Nevada, about what sort of bills are being brought up.
So what can people do when you say be vigilant? What can listeners actually do to make a difference and to make sure that there's a solution in place rather than just watching this happen?
That's a great question. Well, I would say that they should continue to tune into you and learn about what's going on in their community. And then there are a number of things also at the federal level. Right now, we are waiting for the federal government to fund the government for the rest of the fiscal year 2023, which goes until September 30th of next year. A lot of programs that need to be funded, including the Title X Family Planning Program, which most folks haven't probably heard, but funds clinics and communities all across the country, including in Nevada, Southern Nevada. So this program has been underfunded for a number of years. It's a fantastic program. It's been around for 50 years, but for the last nearly 10 years, there's not been an increase in funding, and it's not been able to keep pace with the need. So I would encourage all listeners to reach out to their members of Congress to let them know that this is urgent and that this program needs to be funded. Your listeners can visit powertodecide.org to find out more about this. And we also have an easy way for folks to contact their members of Congress. And another thing I just want listeners to be aware of in Nevada is of your, you know, current policies. Nevada does have a lot of great state level policies that has passed over the last few years regarding birth control. Most insurance plans cover up to a 12-month supply of pills, patches. And so this is a really great policy if people know about it.
Yeah.
So consumers knowing about it is the first step. Also their providers, and if their provider says it's okay and writes the prescription that way, then most insurance companies should cover that so that you don't have to keep returning to the pharmacy every month. We all know that can be, you know, just a really big hassle that's not needed. And then Nevada also has passed a law in 2021 to allow pharmacists to prescribe birth control. So that is also we have seen in some states has been like Oregon has been very helpful. They're still implementing that. There's not a end date when that's going to be available, but I would say to be on the lookout for that. And once that is in place, pharmacists who want to can undergo training to prescribe birth control to consumers.
Okay, that sounds great. All right. So once again, if you want more information, powertodecide.org is the website to go to, powertodecide.org. You can find out more about what Power to Decide does. You can find out more about the current state of birth control across the nation and how you can access it, how you can contact various political representatives and let them know what you think and what needs to be supported. So it's all laid out on powertodecide.org. And Tara, I want to thank you so much for being here today and letting us know exactly what's going on, what the outlook is, what people believe, and what we can do about it. So I appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Heather. I appreciate your time as well.
I'm Heather Vail with the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and this is your community events calendar for nonprofit initiatives and charity events around the Valley. The Nevada Partnership for Homeless Youth, or NPHY, is holding their 7th annual giving campaign right now. Gifts for youth experiencing homelessness can be purchased through their Amazon wish list or dropped off at the NPHY Drop-In Center, which is at 4981 Shirley Street near UNLV. And that can be done Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Now, if you'd like to volunteer and be one of their holiday elves, the 7th annual It's a Wrap Holiday Block Party is going on this weekend to wrap up all those gifts. It's December 17th and 18th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the NPHY Drop-In Center, which is again 4981 Shirley Street near UNLV. Get all the details or sign up to volunteer at nphy.org. That's nphy.org. Opportunity Village is holding their annual Magical Forest events through December 31st at the Magical Forest on the Opportunity Village campus, 6300 West Oakey. Get your tickets and find out all the event times and dates at opportunityvillage.org. That's opportunityvillage.org. And Make-A-Wish Southern Nevada is holding their second annual Trailblaze Challenge presented by Subaru of Las Vegas from February 3rd to 5th with a 12-week training that's happening right now. This is a 26.2-mile hike through the Valley of Fire backcountry in Mesquite with the goal of raising $300,000 to grant wishes for children with critical illnesses in Southern Nevada. Sign up or find out more information at wish.org/snv/trailblaze.